Hello, this is Brian Tracy, and welcome to the Resilience Teleseminar. It's interesting, as I've traveled in 95 countries and spoken in 55 and been in and out of 22 businesses, what you find is that the quality of resilience is absolutely essential for success and happiness in life. And there's two types of people, those who bounce and those who break, if you like, those who fall down and lay there and those who fall down and get up and keep on getting up. And wonderfully enough, like almost any quality or characteristic like self-discipline or focus or concentration, resilience is a learnable quality. You can learn to be a resilient person. You can learn to just bounce back from any adversity or problem that you have, but it has to do with taking control of your mind. Your ability to be resilient is a measure of your personality and character. It's one of the things that people admire the very most about you. When you have a problem in your life or a setback, they watch to see how you handle it. And when you handle it well, cheerfully, positively, constructively, they nod their heads and they say, wow, that's great. And they talk about you in a positive way to other people. There are many people who, when they face adversities or setbacks, they get mad, they get angry, they become depressed, they drink, they lose control of their personalities and their habit patterns. But then there's the leaders. There's the people like you on this line who, when the going gets tough, the tough just get going, and they expect it to happen. Now, Peter Drucker said this one thing, is that the only thing that is inevitable in the life of a leader is the crisis. And the interesting study that was done at Stanford some years ago, they looked at the career paths of hundreds of executives over 10, 20, 30 years, people who started off as junior staff and became the presidents and CEOs of Fortune 500, Fortune 1000 companies. And they looked in all the personnel records and tests and surveys and performance appraisals to try to find out what it was that would predict that a person would rise to the top of a great organization. And the answer that they came up with was the ability to function well in a crisis. They said the crisis is the testing time. The crisis is where you demonstrate what you're truly made of. Epictetus, the Greek philosopher, once said, circumstances do not make the man. They merely reveal him to himself and to others for that matter. So the way that you deal with a crisis is first of all, realize that in your life, crises are inevitable. In fact, if you're living a busy life, you're going to have a crisis every 2 to 3 months, a personal crisis, a financial crisis, a family crisis, a business crisis, something, and these crises have the ability to sometimes bankrupt your business or ruin your career if you don't handle them properly. Now, what this means, by the way, is that everybody on this line is either in a crisis right now, has just gotten out of a crisis, or is just about to have a crisis. And so if there's any news at all, it is that the crises of life are inevitable, and the only question is, how do you handle them? And so here's the first recommendation with resilience. Make a decision in advance right now that no matter what happens to you in life, that by gum, it is not going to stop you. Is that you are unstoppable. Is that you may become disappointed and disillusioned and unhappy and sad and angry and a whole bunch of other things when you have the major setback, but by gum, you're going to bounce back, get back to normal, get back on the road again. And what we have found in psychology is that you can pre-program yourself to be a remarkable person simply by deciding in advance that no matter what happens, it's not going to keep you down. Here are three of the most important words you can say to yourself. And the words are, I am unstoppable. I am unstoppable. I am unstoppable. Many years ago, a friend of mine asked me, what is your most important characteristic or quality? And I couldn't even answer that for about a week. And then I realized that was it. I was unstoppable. That no matter what happened to me in life, I would just never quit. And that's a decision for you to make. And whenever you have a reversal, just say, hey, wait a minute. I'm unstoppable. So your job and my job is to be resilient in the face of everything that happens. Now, the major source of stress that causes us to be less than resilient is feeling out of control. We feel controlled by unexpected reversals, terrible things, difficult things that happen to us, the collapse of our business, problems in our marriages or relationships, problems with our health. And the feeling of being out of control is the major source of stress, major source of anxieties, almost like you feel like you're falling through space. So the starting point in becoming really resilient is to take control. And it's interesting, every study that I've seen that's been done on success over the years finally comes down to that simple point, is that you can't do anything until you take control of your mind or your emotions. So I studied this subject for about 4 years. I studied for thousands of hours. I took piles and piles of notes. And I came to the conclusion that all negative emotions, and remember, negative emotions are the greatest obstacles to happiness, success, resilience, bouncing back, and so on. All negative emotions are ultimately caused by anger. And anger is based on your ability to blame someone or something else for your problem or situation. So the key is to stop blaming. Stop becoming angry at someone or something for something that has happened in your life. And the most powerful words that you can use to take control, to assert control in your life, are the words, I am responsible. I am responsible. Whenever you're afraid of something, just say, wait a minute, I'm responsible. When you ever get angry at someone for something they did or didn't do, say, wait a minute, I'm responsible. Whenever you feel resentful or envious, whenever you feel any concerns at all, immediately cancel the negative emotion. Literally pull the plug out of the wall so the lights go blank. Cancel the negative emotion by saying, I am responsible. You see, what we have found is that it's impossible for you to be negative or angry or to blame someone else for anything if you're saying, I am responsible at the same time. Those three words are the most powerful words of all in canceling out negativity. Now, the instant you say, I am responsible in any situation, you immediately become calm and your mind becomes clear and you become capable of dealing effectively with whatever you're facing. As soon as you start to blame other people, which makes you angrier and angrier and makes your emotions turbulent and it will keep you awake at night and missing your turnoff when you're driving down the freeway thinking about it, you take it home and you wrestle it with your family. Whenever you are blaming and becoming angry about something, you can't think straight. You can't think clearly. Over the years, I've done consulting for more than 1,000 companies, and I've had the chance to get up close and personal with several billionaires, people who started off with nothing and built billion and multi-billion dollar businesses. They had hundreds and thousands of staff. One of them owned 200 companies spread around the world. And one of the things I noticed that when the you-know-what hit the fan, when there was a major problem, these people, these captains of business and industry, all went calm. It's almost like they had just plugged into something and they just calmed completely. They didn't get angry. They didn't say who did it or why did this happen. They didn't go on a witch hunt. What they did is they just became so calm, it was almost like they were meditating. And I was quite amazed because in a couple of cases, I got really angry. I mean, I was involved in the business and the situation, and this happened, and somebody did this awful thing, and so on. And they refused to become upset. And I learned later that they had found over the course of their careers that if you allow yourself to get upset, you just basically shut off all ability to reason correctly, to make good decisions. You kind of lose it, if you like. Whereas if you remain calm, then what happens, you can see the situation clearly and you can make decisions about what you're going to do now. So these top people, the top people that you'll ever meet are people who make it a habit to be calm. And so if you want to be like them, if you want to be like one of the great leaders of history, just stay perfectly calm when you have a challenge. And the way you do it is you say, wait a minute, I'm responsible. Now, what if you go back to your car in the parking lot and somebody's driven into the side and driven away? Are you responsible? Well, at law, you are not responsible, but you are responsible for how you respond. This is called your level of response ability. And what they have found in studying civilizations all throughout history is that civilizations and the lives and careers of individuals, for that matter, rise to the degree to which people rise to the challenges that they face on a day-to-day basis. They respond effectively. They reorganize themselves, and then they counterattack. They take positive, constructive action in the direction of their goals. So just say, I am responsible. I am responsible. Now, here's one of the ways that you can take control of any situation is to get the facts. When something goes wrong in your life, the natural tendency for most of us is to leap to conclusions and conclude the worst possible thing that could have happened. We call this disaster accounting. We immediately assume a disaster has occurred. How many times have you had a situation where you heard something that really got you upset, and then you got some more information, and you found that it hadn't really happened that way, or it hadn't really happened as badly as you thought, or it wasn't even worth getting upset about in the first place? So again, looking at leaders, and especially commanders of great armies in great battles that decide the fate of an empire, if you look at commanders, the first thing they do when they have a setback or adversity of any kind, in order to stay calm, flexible, resilient, is they ask questions. They ask questions. They get the facts. They say, all right, now what exactly has happened here? Calm down, and let's look at this clearly. What exactly has happened? And then, how did it happen? And who was involved in this? And what are the likely ramifications? And if you're not clear, I'll often say to my staff, such and such has happened. I'll say, well, go and phone so-and-so who's involved and find out exactly how bad it is. And so they'll come in, and sometimes they'll be off by a full digit in terms of the cost of a problem or situation. So as you ask questions, you become calm. That's why you find that leaders ask two questions for every statement that they make. Is they don't rush in and just talk all the time. They ask really good questions and listen closely to the answers. And when you ask questions, it forces you to be calm and stops you from becoming upset or worried. So, as we said before, make a decision in advance, pre-programming yourself that no matter what, you will remain calm. And so when something happens, take a deep breath and let it out and just smile. Now, in my business life, and I've worked with more than 1,000 businesses on the outside, more than 20 businesses on the inside, I've made and lost a lot of money. I've made an enormous number of mistakes. But what I found over time is that if you decide in advance that no matter what news is brought to you, you're just going to remain calm and smile and ask a question. What I do with my staff is I tell them, you know, you are all self-employed. You're self-responsible. So the first thing you do when you bring me a problem is you say, this has happened, but I am responsible, and this is what I think we should do. And then we're both calm. And you can't get mad at somebody who says, I'm responsible. You can't get mad at somebody who's focused on solving the problem. Now, there's a law of substitution in psychology that has been told to me by many of my graduates that was the most important law they ever learned. This law is so powerful, it's almost like a hot electric wire. But the law of substitution says that you can only think one thought at a time, either positive or negative. If you think a positive thought, you can't think a negative thought. If you're thinking a negative thought, especially if you're overwhelmed with a negative thought or worry or anger, you can't think a positive thought. Now, here's the point, is you can substitute one thought for another. So let us say you have a worry or a problem or a concern, and it's just going around and around in your mind. It's not even something you can do anything about, especially it may be something that has happened that you're angry about. The way you substitute it is you immediately say, stop. It's the most interesting thing. In psychology, it's called a pattern interrupt. It's like smacking a music machine and causing it to stop playing. So you say, stop, and your mind will actually stop, and there will be a blank period in there, and then you immediately, like turning a searchlight, you switch your mind onto something that you want, something positive, something constructive. I'll talk to you a little bit about this in a couple of seconds, but the key thing you think about is your biggest goal. What is it that you really want? What's really important? Or you can think about a member of your family. You can think about something that makes you happy. You can force yourself to think about something positive and constructive, and by so doing, you cancel and push away the negative thought. So the law of substitution is very, very powerful, and that's why we say, I am unstoppable. And when you have a problem, you say, wait a minute, I'm unstoppable. Positive thought cancels the negative thought. When you have negative thinking, you can't think creatively. When you say, I am unstoppable, you start to get ideas on how to solve the problem or the situation. The second thing is, I am responsible. Very positive statement. It's the statement of leaders, powerful people, people that we admire and respect and esteem. And when you say that about yourself, all of your negativity seems to stop, and the more you think about it. Now, here's an interesting point about responsibility. Your mind is very powerful. It has the ability to rationalize. And there are two definitions of rationalization. One is putting a favorable explanation on an otherwise unfavorable event. So in other words, we sometimes use our mind against ourselves. And a friend of mine says another way to say it is rational lies. In other words, we lie to ourselves. We say negative things to ourselves that may or may not be true. So what you do, since you're responsible, is instead of using your mind to think of reasons why someone or someone else is to blame for a problem in your life, who did it, instead you say, wait a minute, I am responsible. Now let me think, how is it that I am responsible? I've worked with probably thousands of people over the years who've been through a bad marriage or a bad relationship, or maybe a bad business partnership or business deal where there was an awful lot involved, money and emotion and so on. And I remember a man came to my seminar and told me the story, and he was really wound up. He and a friend of his had started a business, and they worked for 10 years to build the business, and they built it into a multi-million-dollar business, and it was very successful, and they were happy. They never thought they'd do that well in life. And then one day he went into the office, and his partner wasn't there. And he phoned around and phoned home, and his wife wasn't there. And what he found out was that his partner and his wife had been having an affair, and they had stripped the business bare, emptied the bank accounts, all of which had his signature on them, and disappeared. And he came in, and there he was, completely out of left field. He had no idea what was going to happen, and boy, was he tipped over. I mean, he was so unhappy, so angry. And did he have a right to be angry? He had been cheated, he'd been betrayed, he'd been swindled, and he was now bankrupt. And it took him about 4 years. He didn't go into bankruptcy. It took him about 4 years to make enough money to pay back the bills. Anyway, I said to him, I said, the only way you're going to deal with it is by accepting responsibility. And so he said, well, how can I do that? I mean, I never did anything. I was completely innocent. And this is a real challenge. Watch out for this, because if you are totally innocent, you find it very hard to let go. And the answer is to forgive. Is to forgive the other person for everything and anything that they ever did. Because until you can forgive, you can't walk away from it. So I said, think of how you might have been responsible. And so he hated to do this, but he started to walk through it. And he used his wonderful mind to think, well, you know, I did get too busy in the business, and I never did anything else but work, and I ignored my wife, and I didn't come home till late at night, and on the weekends I played golf, and I watched television and watched football games, and my wife said lots of times that she wished I would spend more time with her. And so he started thinking, and my business partner, I knew a long time ago that he wasn't perfectly honest because he would sometimes try to cheat our customers and so on, but I ignored that. And so he just went through it, and he thought of all the reasons why he was responsible, that he wasn't as clean as a whistle, that he had done or not done certain things that had led to the situation. After he did that, he was calmer, and then he found out where his wife and his partner had moved to the other side of the country, and they'd set up everything so perfectly that they couldn't be touched legally. And he wrote them a letter, and he forgave them both and wished them well. And he did this over the weekend of the seminar, and by Sunday afternoon, he was one of the calmest, happiest, warmest people you could imagine. All the anger, all the bitterness, all the negativity was gone. And you can do the same thing. So use your wonderful mind to think of reasons why you are responsible for a situation in your life. You were responsible. Bad marriage, you got yourself into it. Bad business deal, you got yourself into it. You're in debt, you owe a lot of money. Who spent the money? You did. You know, if you bought stock and it went down, who made the decision or allowed the decision to be made for you? And when you start to think like this, you start, wait a minute. I'm in control of my own life. I'm responsible. I'm not a child. I'm not a pawn. I'm not a passive agent. I'm the power in my own life. And when you start to think like that, you become self-confident and determined and resilient once more. Now, one of the great robbers in our lives of happiness is worry. is we worry an enormous amount. So I'm going to give you a couple of thoughts with regard to worry. And first of all, it's one of the great decisions that I made in life. And it is this, is never worry about something that you can't change. Never be angry about something that you can't change or that you can't do anything about. Now, in life, there are two time periods. There's the past and there's the future. Now, the present is just a moment passing in between the two, changing second by second. And the rule is never confuse a fact with a problem. So what is a fact? A fact is something that is. It's unchangeable. Your age is a fact. Your eye color is a fact. The temperature outside today is a fact. You don't get upset about those facts. Imagine someone came to my seminar. A gentleman came to my seminar. I said, how are you doing? And he said, well, I'm okay, but I'm still mad. And I said, oh, really? I said, what are you mad at? He said, well, it's the picnic. I said, the picnic. He said, yeah, got rained out. I said, what picnic is this? Well, it was about 5 years ago. I said, 5 years ago? He said, yeah, my family and I had prepared to go for a picnic on a Sunday afternoon, and we packed up everything. We had it all ready to go, and we got up on Sunday, and it was raining, and it ruined the whole darn picnic. We had to unpack everything, and we couldn't go. And I'm still mad, he said. I'm still mad. Now, if somebody said that to you, you'd probably think that this person needs some serious counseling. This person needs a checkup from the neck up. You mean 5 years ago it rained and you're still mad? Why is that so silly as an example? Well, the answer is because the fact that it rained means that it's unchangeable, and the fact that it happened in the past means that there's nothing you can do about it. And I tell you that story and you say it's a little bit silly story. Well, is it really? How many people do you know, including yourself, who when they think back on something that happened weeks, months, years, 5, 10 years ago, some people are still angry about events that took place in their childhood 25 years ago. And every time they think about it, they just get turned on. They just become angry about it. And so the most unhappiness you'll find, and you'll find that all the work of all the psychologists and all the psychiatrists and all the psychotherapists and coaches and counselors is all aimed at one thing, helping you identify the past event that made you unhappy and helping you to let it go. And that's all it is, helping you to let it go. Because as long as you keep thinking about it and rehashing it and talking about it and discussing, it's exactly as if it was happening again right now. William James of Harvard once said, as I think of myself now, as I was in the past, my past must resurrect itself and become my future. So one of the things that you do is don't get upset about a fact, and past events are facts. Now, a problem is something you can do something about. A goal unachieved is a problem unsolved. Any obstacle between you and what you want to accomplish in life is just a problem. It's just something that you have to solve. It's like if an inventor wants to invent something, then all the ways that don't work are just problems to be solved until the only way left is the way that does work. So it's really important that you never get upset about a past event. And everything that has happened to you in the past, you have to let go of. And one of the fastest ways to let go is say, wait a minute, I am responsible, and then to forgive the other person. Now, people get upset about this, and they say, but if I forgive that person after what they did, I mean, there's no way I can forgive that person. Remember this, forgiveness has nothing to do with the other person. In fact, if the other person knew that you were still upset, they'd probably be happy about it. Forgiveness has only to do with freeing you, yourself, for the indefinite future. And so what we know is that you are mentally healthy to the degree to which you can freely forgive and let go of anyone and anything that's ever hurt you. And the first time you think about this, you think, oh my God, I can't do that. Yes, you can. You can do it by deciding to do it. So here's what I learned. And I've, you know, had a lot of unpleasant things done to me in my life. Is I've learned this little mantra, and I say, God bless him or her, I forgive them and let them go. God bless him or her, I forgive them and let them go. God bless them, I forgive them and let them go. And I wish them well. And just mentally walk away. And suddenly your mind is liberated. You're full of energy. You can focus and concentrate on the future. You become flexible and resilient and empowered. You just let go of the past and focus on the future. So with regard to worry, most of us have worry situations in our life. The good news is that most of the things you worry about never happen. However, some people have grown up with a mother, usually a mother, who worries a lot. And as a result, part of their mental conditioning is to worry a lot. It may have been your father, but it's usually the mother. And so whenever there's something that is unsure in your life, you tend to worry. You kind of tear at it like a dog shaking a rag. And sometimes you carry it around with you. You go to sleep with it. You wake up. When you're having reversals in your business, when you're having financial reversals, or you're having problems in your relationship or with your health, is you worry. So here is a method. It's called the Worry Buster Formula. It's how you can basically zap worries from now on, so you can take every worry that you have right now, starting with the thing that you worry about the most. And it's always a good question, you know, to ask, what are your three biggest worries in life right now? And there's always one that's number one. And it's financial, or it's physical, or it's a relationship. Always one of the three. And then you say, all right, what is it exactly that I'm worried about? What is it exactly that I'm worried about? And let's say you're having problems with your business. You say, well, I'm worried about my financial situation. Well, what else are you worried about? Well, I'm worried about the people in the company. I'm worried about the customers. I'm worried about my family and my future. Okay, so you're worried about your financial situation. Then the second question you ask is, what is the very worst thing that could possibly happen? We call this the worst possible outcome, the WPO. What's the worst possible outcome of this worry situation? First of all, be clear what it is you're worried about. It's an old saying that diagnosis is half the cure. Accurate diagnosis is half the cure. What that means is very often we're worried and we're not really sure what it is we're worried about. We know it has to do with our family, our business, our health. So be very clear and think on paper. Write down, what is it exactly that I'm worried about? Some people say, fill out the disaster report. This is what I'm worried about. Second part is, what's the worst thing that can happen? What is the disaster that could occur if everything went the worst it possibly could? So let's say it's a business problem. You could say, well, my business would go bankrupt. I would lose all my money. My staff would all be gone. I'd lose my home, and I'd have to start over from nothing. See, what you've done is you've been really honest. You've been what they call brutally honest. Jim Collins talks about top leaders in his book, Good to Great. And he said one of the qualities of top leaders is they have the ability to ask themselves the brutal questions. And that's a good line, the brutal questions. So the brutal question is, what's the worst that can happen here? And I could lose everything. Okay. Then step number three is resolve to accept the worst should it occur. You say, okay, I could lose everything. What would I do then? Well, I could start over again. I wouldn't die. I've been in difficult situations in the past. Most self-made millionaires have been broke or nearly broke 2.3 times. Many self-made entrepreneurial millionaires have been in and out of 10 and 15 different businesses before they found one that worked. So, and the obvious others didn't work. And they collapsed. And they had to walk away and lose all the time and energy and money they'd put into it. So it's quite normal. As a matter of fact, successful people make far more mistakes and fail far more often than unsuccessful people. They just keep trying and they try again and they try again and they just don't allow it to get them down. They use the worry buster. What's the worst thing that can happen? Well, I lose everything. Well, all right, if I lose everything, I lose everything. Now, step number four is once you have decided to accept the worst, your worry stops. This is the most amazing darn thing, is that even if a person has a terrible medical diagnosis, and they say to the doctor, what's the worst thing that can happen if we can't cure it? The doctor says, in all honesty, the worst thing that can happen is that you will die in 6 to 12 months. And so what you do is say, okay, if that's the worst thing that can happen, all right, I'll accept it. The minute you accept it, by the way, you become calm, and your body becomes powerful and capable of fighting back and combating and overwhelming the infection. Many people who have been given 6 months to live are still living 16 years later because they stopped fighting with it. They say, okay, if that happens, I can accept it. Now, here's the final step. Begin immediately to improve upon the worst. Now you've accepted the worst that can happen, so the worry's gone. If it happens, it happens. And then you say the worry's gone. Now, how can I minimize the worry situation? I took a course at the university in microeconomics, and they taught what was called, it's a decision-making model, it's called the Minimax Regret Analysis. Anybody who's ever taken a business course knows about the Minimax Regret Analysis. In academic terms, what it means is you minimize the maximum regret. So what's the worst thing that can possibly happen? Well, what can you do to minimize the worst thing that can possibly happen? What can I do right now to make sure that the worst doesn't occur? Now, you're completely free from the worry, which was dragging you down and tiring you out and keeping you awake at night. Now your mind is calm and clear and resilient, and now you're open to all kinds of things that you can do, and now you're back in control. You're back in control. So let me repeat the Worry Buster formula. Take any situation that you're worried about today and say, what exactly is it that I'm worried about? And be clear. Accurate diagnosis is half the cure. Sometimes by identifying what you're really worried about causes the worry to disappear. Second of all, say what's the worst that can possibly happen and be honest. Be brutal with yourself. Third of all, resolve to accept the worst should it occur. And fourth of all, get busy making sure that the worst doesn't happen. J. Paul Getty, who became one of the richest men in the world, said the two keys to success are this. He said, before you go into any business deal, determine what's the worst thing that can possibly happen, the maximum that you can lose in this business deal before you go in. And then second of all, make sure it doesn't happen. Make sure it doesn't happen. In fact, if I had done that in a couple of business situations I'd been in, I'd have made different decisions. If I say, what's the worst that can happen here, and the worst that can happen, you lose all this money, and I wouldn't have gone in the first place. And I think a lot of you know exactly what I'm talking about. So the key attitude is to resolve not to worry about anything you can't change. And remember, you can't change a past event. You can't change a past event. Which brings us to an interesting quality about resilience, and that is your attitude. And what we find is that top people have certain attitudes in common, and one of those attitudes is called future orientation. As they think about the future most of the time. They think about the future all the time and where they're going and what they have to do to get there. And this is really important because when you're thinking about the future, you can idealize. And in idealizing, you imagine that you have a magic wand. And you could wave this magic wand and you could make your future fantastic in every way. If your future was fantastic in every way, what would it look like? What would your business be like? What would your home and lifestyle be like? What would your family be like? What would your health be like? How much would you weigh? How fit would you be? And then what would your financial life be like? How much money would you have in the bank? How much passive income would you have per year from your investments if your life was perfect sometime in the future? And then just keep thinking every day about things that you could do to create a perfect future. And as you think of those things, you'll have more ideas. You'll be more positive. You'll have a greater sense of personal power. And all your negativity will just drift away. Which brings us to another orientation that top people have, and that's called that brings us to another orientation that top people have, and it's called solution orientation. And solution orientation means that top people think about solutions most of the time. When something goes wrong, the very first thing they say is, what's the solution? What is our next action? What is it that I can do right now to solve this problem, overcome this obstacle, or achieve this goal? And when you think about solutions most of the time, you move into the top 5 or 10% of people in your world. For most people, when things go wrong, the first thing they think about is who's to blame, who did it. And remember, blame lies at the root of all negative emotions. But not leaders, not top people. When something goes wrong, they realize that if it's happened, it's a past event, and it can't be changed. The milk has already been spilled. The dish has already been broken. Now what do you do? Now the answer is, all right, what's our next step? How can we minimize the damage? How can we take advantage of it? How can we learn from this situation? And they keep focused on the future, and they keep focused on the solution. Now, what do you think happens to you if you think about solutions to all your problems all the time? The answer is you become more creative, you become calmer, you become more powerful and competent, and you think of more and more solutions to more and more problems. Pretty soon, your mind dances like a Christmas tree. You've got so many ideas. Every single time something comes up, you say, well, we could do this, and we could do that, and we could do this, and we could do that. And that is the mark of the superior person. The superior person is always thinking about solutions. Now, what do you get for solving problems? The answer is the opportunity to solve even bigger problems. If you look at the 80-20 rule in our society, that 20% of the people enjoy 80% of the rewards, and the 80% of the people have to fight for the crumbs that fall off the table from the top 20%. What's the difference? Well, one of the differences is the people in the bottom 80% are not really good at solving the problems they meet on their level. So they always have to be watched, and they always have to be supervised, and they always have to be monitored to make sure they do what they're supposed to do. People in the top 20% are always coming up with ideas to achieve goals and overcome obstacles. They're always thinking about solutions. And as a result, as they demonstrate their competence at one level, they're pulled up, they're pushed up, they're promoted to higher levels where they're given more responsibility, bigger problems to solve, and more money. So you can actually change your whole life by this very day, focusing on the biggest problems in your life and saying, what's the solution? What can we do? And what else can we do? And what else can we do? And think and talk about solutions all the time. Now, the greatest discovery in human history is the power of your mind. And in its simplest terms, we know that thoughts are causes and conditions are effects. Your thoughts create the conditions of your life, and you've heard this many times. So the bottom line is that you become what you think about most of the time. You become what you think about most of the time. So the question is, what do you think about most of the time? Well, they did a study at the University of Pennsylvania, and over a 22-year period, they interviewed 350,000 salespeople, entrepreneurs, business owners, executives like yourself, and they asked them, and they followed them every week, and they called them at random and said, what are you thinking about right now? What are you thinking about right now? Once a week, they would call them at random, and they would just give the answer. Over time, they divided them up into 10%, bottom 10%, next 10%, all the way up to the top 10%, and looked at the thinking styles of people at each percentile in terms of their income and their income growth. They found that people in the top 10%, like yourself, thought very differently from people in the bottom 80 or 90%. And the way they thought was simply this. If they thought about what they wanted and how to get it most of the time, they thought about their goals and the future most of the time. And the only question they asked is how. So I'm going to give you another word to remember, and the word is how. From now on, whenever you have a goal, you want to increase your income, get out of debt, lose weight, become physically fit, turn a profit in your business, double your sales, the only question you ask is, how? How can I do it? Now, the wonderful thing is that there's a solution to every problem, and every problem you have has already been solved by someone else. So don't allow yourself to use your wonderful mind to think of reasons why it's not possible. Use your wonderful mind to ask the question, how? And every time you ask the question, how, you will get ideas. And every idea is for an action that you can take immediately to move closer to your goal, to solve your problem, to make progress. So how is an action word, and how is a power word? How is the word of leaders? How is the word of people who are very resilient in every part of their work? So the studies have been done to find out who the top people are in every field and what are their qualities. And what they came up with, and this is one of my favorite insights, is that the number one quality that more predicts success and happiness than any other quality is the quality of optimism. Successful people, happy people, likable people, personable people are optimists. And when they ask people, what do you mean by optimism? How would a person demonstrate optimism? The word that came back is cheerful. He or she is a cheerful person. And then they asked even further, when you say cheerful, what kind of a person is cheerful? And they came up with the word that most describes the most successful people, the highest selling salespeople, the most successful entrepreneurs, managers, and parents and friends, and it is the word nice. He or she is a nice person. Because they're nice, they're cheerful no matter what happens. As a result, they're just positive and optimistic most of the time. Does this mean that these people don't have problems or difficulties? No, what it means is that they choose to respond effectively to those problems and difficulties, whereas other people choose to get upset and angry and frustrated and so on. So your job is to be an optimist. Now, what we have found is that optimism is a form of mental fitness. In fact, and it's another measure how together you are as a person is how much of the time you are an optimist. And by the way, this doesn't mean you have to be an optimist all the time. If you can hit 80% in a fast-moving world like today, you're doing real well. If 20% of the time you're kind of preoccupied with what's going on around you, that's okay. The general tendency is the key. So we find that if you want to become physically fit, you work out physically. You exercise. You do stretching exercises, strength exercises, aerobic exercises. If you want to work out mentally and become really optimistic and positive and powerful and constructive and resilient in every way, you work out mentally. And we find there's four ways that optimists think that enable them to move into the top 20%, top 10%, move to the top of their fields, and most of all, be really happy and effective at what they do. So here's the four. Number one is optimists think and talk about their goals most of the time and how they can achieve them. If you're driving down the street and somebody cuts you off and you feel angry, immediately think about your goal. If you have a sale that goes through or a financial situation or problem, think about your goal. Use the law of substitution. You see, every time you think about your goal, it makes you happy. Every time you think about your goal, it cancels out the negative emotion. Every time you think about your goal, you get another idea or something that you can do to achieve the goal. So you can actually keep yourself up and positive and cheerful and optimistic by thinking about your goal most of the time. And the only question you ask is how. Now, the second key to optimism is to look for the good in every person and every situation. Make it a habit of looking for something good. Many people who've been brought up in difficult environments, negative parents, or surrounded by negative people or siblings, have a tendency to look for something negative or wrong with everything. In fact, it's called the Western critical condition, tradition. The Western critical tradition is we look at a poem and we immediately critique the poem. We look at a book and we critique the book. We look at a movie and we look for the things that are wrong with it. Sometimes after a movie, we'll say it was a good movie, except that he shouldn't have said this or that didn't make sense. And we take great delight in picking apart things in our lives. And what you have to do is you have to fight that natural tendency, which you may have had all your life, and instead look for the good. When something goes wrong, say, well, that's good. And then look into it to see what you can find. Now, here's a discovery. There is something good in everything that happens. There is something good somewhere, somehow. And if you go looking for the good, because of the law of substitution, you become a positive and confident and more resilient person. So you say, well, what could happen? What has happened here that could be good? What could we gain from this? And then you go looking like guys on a scavenger hunt with a flashlight. And I promise you that if you look for the good, you'll always find something good. And while you're looking for something good, you'll always be positive and cheerful. And you'll be calm, and you'll be more creative, and you'll be more optimistic and more personable. You'll be a better all-around person. Number three, in terms of becoming an optimist and mental fitness, and this is perhaps the most important of all, is seek the valuable lesson in every setback and difficulty. When Napoleon Hill did his studies back in the first part of the last century, he interviewed 500 of the most successful, the wealthiest men in America, people who started from nothing and built great fortunes. And he found that over time, every one of them, without exception, had reached the point where they looked into every problem or setback for an equal or greater lesson or benefit. And they always found something. So, when we talk about problems, sometimes I'll ask my audience, I'll say, does anybody here have any problems? And everybody goes, oh, and they raise their hand. I say, well, that's okay, because problems come like the waves of the ocean. They never stop. They come day and night. They're every single kind of problem, but one of the characteristics of being a human being is to have problems. Norman Vincent Peale, when he was alive, told me this story. He said he ran into a man on the streets of New York, and the man said, he asked him how was he doing, and he was so down. He said, I've got so many problems. I've got business problems and customer problems and family. I've got so many problems. I just wish I could solve my problems. And Norman, Vincent Peale, said, well, as a matter of fact, I just came from a place up in the north part of the city where the people have no problems at all. He said, I'd love to go there. Where is it? He said, it's called Flower Lawn Cemetery. Those people in the cemetery have no problems at all. They got no financial problems, no business problems, no health problems. And he said, I came to the conclusion at that moment that problems are a sign of life. That if you have problems, it means you're alive. If you wake up in the morning, you don't have any problems, you better pinch yourself because you may not be alive. So everybody has problems of one kind or another. The only question is how you deal with them. So what I do is I ask people to do this exercise with me. Take all of your problems and imagine a stack of dinner plates. At the bottom, you have your little problems and you move up. And then on the very top of the stack of dinner plates is your biggest problem of all. And think about your biggest problem in your life today. Almost invariably, it comes with hair on top. Almost invariably, it's another person or relationship. Sometimes it's financial, sometimes it's business, but usually it's another. In 85% of cases, it'll be associated with another person. Then imagine that this problem was sent to you by a great power that loves you from the other side of the universe. And this great power knows that for you to grow and be happy and successful in the future, you have to learn certain lessons on the way through. So every time you need to learn a lesson, this great power sends you a problem. Norman Vincent Peale also said, when God wants to send you a gift, he wraps it up in a problem. And the bigger the gift that God wants to send you, the bigger the problem he wraps it up in. So imagine that this problem that you're facing, that's causing you stress and anxiety, imagine it has been sent to you as a gift. And within it is contained a seed of an equal or greater benefit. Within it is contained a valuable lesson that you need to learn to move onward and upward in your life. What could it be? Now, here's an important point, is if you do this exercise with me, again, you're willing to ask yourself the brutal questions, you're willing to look at your problem situation as though it's a gift, you're willing to look into it for the lesson. First of all, as you look for the lesson, you become completely positive and optimistic and more creative because of the law of substitution. So you look into it, and your first answer is going to be, well, maybe the lesson is I should do more of this or less of that. And you say, okay, now drill deeper. What else could be the lesson? Well, maybe I should start this or stop that. Okay, drill deeper. What else could be the lesson? And if it's a big problem that's been going on for a long time, you have to keep drilling deeper and deeper and asking more and more brutal questions. And it takes tremendous courage to do this. But when you get down to sometimes the seventh level, you realize that the lesson is that I shouldn't be in this situation at all. All the other answers, the lessons were ways to make the situation work, and maybe the real answer, which you hated to face, is you shouldn't be in this career at all. You shouldn't be in this relationship at all. You shouldn't be in this business or partnership at all. And once you come up with the right answer, it's almost like a great sense of release takes place. You feel exhilarated. Have you ever had an experience where you've been in a bad situation for a long time and you finally decided to just walk away? You finally decided you'd had enough and you walked away? How did you feel afterwards? Well, the answer is you felt great. You felt wonderful. You felt free at last. And all the terrible or negative things you thought might happen, none of them happened. So when you do walk away from a difficult situation as a result of this exercise, you'll always have only one reaction. It's the same reaction everybody has everywhere in the world. And the reaction is, I should have done this a long time ago. I should have done this. Why on earth did I wait so long? I knew a long time ago I should have made this major change. And now you're back in control of your life. You're more positive. You're more flexible. And always something good will happen to you. When you have the courage and the character and the confidence to walk away from a bad situation, God, the great power of the universe, source, whatever you want to call it, will reward you with something even better. And maybe what it will reward you with is just peace of mind. You'll just feel happy again, and your whole life will start to get better. So, the fourth way that you become an unshakable optimist is you feed your mind continually with mental nutrition, mental protein, healthy mental vitamins and minerals. You see, we are surrounded by an incredibly negative world. Over the years, people have said, I'm going to publish a newspaper that has only positive news because I'm so tired of reading all this negative news. And every one of those newspapers went bankrupt. Every radio show or TV show that tried to make and emphasize positive news, they all went bankrupt. people somehow are not interested in all that positive stuff. They want negative stuff. So you're surrounded by negative material. And it's almost like a form of smog, if you like. It's almost like a form of pollution in the world around you. And what you have to do is you have to deliberately feed your mind with positive ideas, positive insights, positive inspirations. What I encourage people to do is to read every morning for 30 to 60 minutes in something positive and uplifting or even inspirational. There's a rule that says the first hour is the rudder of the day. And if you feed your mind with something positive and uplifting or educational in your field in the first 30 to 60 minutes, rather than watching television or listening to news or reading the paper, is your whole day will be better. It's almost like you've gone through a vigorous aerobic mental fitness session. All day long, you'll be more positive and uplifted. If you read 30 to 60 minutes a day, you'll read a book a week. That's 50 books a year. The average adult reads less than one book a year. If you read 50 books a year in your field, or even 50 books a year that's kind of improve your thinking, you're going to be so far ahead of the rest of the world, it will be unbelievable. In fact, you'll notice the difference in 30 days. Probably never go back. So that's one of the ways of becoming an unshakable optimist. Feed your mind with really, really positive stuff. The second thing is to listen to audios as you drive around. Listen to positive, motivational, uplifting, inspirational audios as you drive around. Most people, when they drive around, listen to the radio or listen to music. But this is not for you. Your mind is too precious to just fill with what we call mental garbage or, you know, mental candy, mental potato chips. Here's an interesting question. If you had become enormously successful and bought a beautiful racehorse, and this racehorse cost you $500,000. Oh, it's a beautiful horse. It's so beautiful. It's the pride of your life. Would you feed that racehorse with potato chips and candy and French fries and Coca-Cola in their feed bag? Absolutely not. When we've been raising our daughter, Catherine, we've owned stabled several horses. And in every single case, you get a very good stable that gives that horse very good food and very good exercise and very good grooming, because that horse is expensive. So you would never feed your racehorse with that kind of garbagey food. By the same token, you should never feed you, who's far more valuable than the racehorse, with garbagey information and garbagey ideas and negativity on the news. Feed your mind with positive stuff. Sometimes one great idea that you'll learn from an audio program like this can change your whole life. For the rest of your life, you'll think differently in a very positive way. And you'll be a real help to other people because you share the ideas with them and it changes their life. And it becomes like a multiplication or a domino effect. Attend seminars and courses. One of the things we've found is more people's lives are changed by attending a really good seminar or program than from almost any other medium. So go to courses taught by experts in your field. Go to courses that teach you fabulous positive material that will help you feel better, work better, act better, get along better with other people. It's really, really important. And finally, associate with positive people. You cannot imagine. We find that almost every change in your life begins when you start to associate with different people. I have some good friends who had a company, and that company was famous because every salesperson who joined that company from a very large industry doubled and tripled their income within 30, 60, 90 days. They may have been doing well in another business, same company, selling the same product. It was real estate for that matter, but everybody who joined that company, just their sales went through the roof. And everybody fought to get into that company. It was all because of one manager. He created an environment that was so positive and so inspirational that people came into that place and they laughed all the time and they were happy and they were full of energy and they made more money than they'd ever dreamed of. So one of the things you have to do throughout life is make some decisions about the people around you and make a decision not to associate with negative people. Make a decision not to associate with difficult people, negative people, complaining people, critical people. We say if you see two negative people coming towards you, introduce them to each other and send them off together to ruin each other's lives. But don't you spend time with negative people trying to play ain't it awful and listen to them complain and so on. Get around winners. Get around positive people. Get around happy people. Do you know that one negative person can drain your energy batteries for a whole day and one positive person can supercharge you for the whole day? So be very careful about your human associations. They make an enormous difference. Well, we're coming close to the end of this, so I'm going to give you a couple of other ways to remain resilient. And one of them is positive health habits. You cannot imagine if you are overweight, if you're eating the wrong foods, junk foods, poor foods, you're drinking too much, you're sitting around, you're not fit, and so on, you tend to become overtired, you lose your self-esteem, you lose your self-confidence. Vince Lombardi once said, "Fatigue doth make cowards of us all." Sometimes the very best thing you can do to regain your resilience is to get really rested. Sometimes when you feel you have no time at all, you should just take the whole weekend off and do nothing. And just sleep in deeply and just relax and just recharge your mental batteries. Sometimes the whole world looks better when you are completely refreshed. So here's a couple of things that you can do to take wonderful care of your physical and mental health. Number one is a good diet. Now, you know everything you need to know about diet, so I'll just give you my recommendation. It's eliminate the three white poisons from your diet. The three white poisons are white sugar, white salt, and white flour. All of these substances are inert substances. They are dead. They have no vitamins or minerals. White flour has been bleached until all the food value has been taken out of it. Maybe whole wheat bread will have a little bit of food value left, but mostly it's just food coloring. But most bread products, almost anything made of flour, is just a stuffer, just like a stocking stuffer. It has no value at all. As a matter of fact, the best thing you can do with bread products is throw them away and maybe just eat what's on them. Stop eating salt. Stop eating sugar. I ran into a friend of mine recently, and he had lost about 20 pounds. His jacket was swinging on him like a tent. I said, "Good grief, how did you lose the weight?" He said, "I just followed your recommendation. I stopped eating sugar, salt, and flour, and the weight just fell off." It fell off at the rate of about half a pound to a pound a day. It just falls off. So stop eating those three. Now, the second key to remaining resilient in terms of positive health habits is aerobic exercise. I cannot tell you, every single study that's coming out now says that aerobic exercise energizes your brain, increases your creativity, makes you more positive and personable, makes you more alert, puts spring in your step, makes you a happier person, raises your self-confidence and self-esteem. It's the most wonderful thing. And what you need to do is resolve to exercise aerobically, which means you get your heart rate and your breathing up to a high level, 30 minutes or more per day, 5 or 6 days a week. And you can get your aerobic exercise just by going for a fast walk at the end of the day. Best is to work out for 30 to 60 minutes each morning on a treadmill, a life cycle, swimming, doing anything. Get your whole day started off well. And if you eliminate sugar, salt, and flour and exercise 30 to 60 minutes a day aerobically, not only will you feel better and think better, but the weight will just fall off. You'll feel fit. You'll look good. You'll feel happy and so on. I cannot tell you the number of people that have come back to me and said that little piece of advice, cut out the three white poisons and exercise a little bit every day, has transformed their life, caused them to lose 20, 30 pounds, change their self-image and self-concept, and so on. And finally, get lots of rest. Number three, get lots of rest, especially when you're under a lot of stress. When you're under stress, your brain body burns a lot of energy. So get lots of rest. And whenever you feel that you're too overwhelmed with work or too tired to rest, that's when you need to rest the most. Well, we're coming to the end of our program on resilience. And so I just want to leave you with a quick problem-solving formula that is used by top people all over the world. And the problem-solving formula has 7 steps. And I'll just give it to you quickly, and you can replay and re-listen to this. Number one is define the problem clearly. Clarity is really, really important. What exactly is the problem that you're facing? And then ask yourself, what else is the problem? Beware a problem for which there's only one definition. The more definitions you have of a problem, the easier it is to solve with the right solution. Number two is change your language with regard to problems. From now on, never use the word problem. Instead, use the word situation. Instead of saying, "I have a problem," you say, "I have a situation." You see, the word problem is negative, whereas the word situation is neutral. Even better, use the word challenge. I'm facing an interesting challenge. We're going through some interesting challenges here at work. A challenge is something you rise to. It brings out the very best in you. It makes you a better person. And even best of all, use the word opportunity. We don't have any problems in this company. We just have opportunities that are disguised. And so look at every setback or difficulty as though it contains the seed of an equal or greater advantage or benefit. Look for the valuable lesson. Look for the good. And look for something that you can get from it. And sometimes your greatest successes in life will come as a result of your biggest problems. So now you've changed your language. The fourth step is for you to ask, what are all the possible solutions? What are all the possible solutions? And write down all the different things that you could do, including nothing. Sometimes it's not really a problem, it's an opportunity. Sometimes it's a good thing that it happened in the first place. And once you've written all the solutions, and you'll always start off with the most obvious, then you ask, what else is the solution? And what else is the solution? And what else could we do? Or what else could we not do? Or what else could we change? And as you keep asking what else, you come up with more and more great ideas. Finally, you ask, what is the best solution? Of all the solutions we have, what's the best solution? And remember, any solution is better than no solution. And finally, take action. Once you've decided on a solution, take action immediately. The only real cure for worry, negativity, concern, fear, doubt, or anything else is purposeful action. And what we have found is when you take action toward achieving a goal or solving a situation, if you like, you immediately get a burst of energy and self-esteem. You get more self-confidence. You feel empowered and stronger. You become more resilient. You bounce back. But if you're sitting there thinking about it or driving around thinking about it, it just makes you more and more negative. It's interesting. They say today that people are 10 times more likely to be depressed, clinically depressed, than they were 100 years ago. And what's the reason for that? Well, the research over decades is very interesting. They found that the reason is because people spend too much time thinking about their problems instead of taking the time to take action against their problems and do something. They think about them and they talk about them and they worry about them and they get their teeth into them and shake them and they discuss them in their mind and they review them before they go to sleep. You know what I'm talking about? So the rule is this, is that the law of attraction is powerful and it attracts into your life whatever you think about emotionalized most of the time. So therefore, don't think and talk about your problems. Think and talk about the solutions. Because the more you think and talk about your problems, the more of them you pull into your life. So my wife will always say to me when we're talking about some challenge we have with the business and the family, she said, do you want more of that in our lives? I said, no, then stop talking about it. So she constantly reminded me, stop talking about it. Your mind is so powerful, you keep on talking about it, it's going to come back to you. So let's wrap up by just saying this, is that make a decision today that you are going to be a positive, optimistic, constructive, and resilient person, that nothing will ever stop you because you are unstoppable. Make a decision today that whatever problem or crisis you face is you will bounce back from it, is you will learn from it, you will look into it, you'll look for the good, you'll seek the valuable lesson, and then you'll bounce back. There's a wonderful line from a poem that I always liked, and it's about a soldier, and he said, I'll lay me down to bleed a while and then rise and fight again. And I always think of that in terms of the battles that you and I fight in life. I'll lay me down to bleed a while. In other words, I don't like it, but then I'll rise to fight again. So develop a reputation for being the kind of person who never gives up. Imagine that everybody's watching you, and they're watching to see how you respond to the inevitable challenges of life. And what you do is you always serve as a role model, as an example, as a leader, as a person who never gets bothered, stays calm. Now, you can go home and close the door, and by yourself, you can be as upset as you want, but when everybody's looking at you, you just smile cheerfully and say, all right, what exactly happened, and what action can we take now to minimize this or to solve the problem? Remember, this is a great time to be alive. We have been through recessions and depressions and panics and crashes before, and we will go through them again before our lifetimes are over. The only question is, how do you respond to them, and do you respond to them effectively or not? You have an absolutely wonderful mind. Your wonderful mind can help you or hurt you. It can make life a heaven or a hell, depending upon what you think about and focus on and talk about most of the time. So from now on, think about what you want. Think about where you're going. Think about your goals. Think about the solutions to your problems. Think optimistically and positively and constructively, and think that no matter what happens, you are unstoppable. Thank you for being with me today. Now, let's throw the lines open and answer any questions that you might have. The person listening to this, can you unmute the button and take the questions, please?
Well, if anybody has a question, this is the conference operator, sorry. Just press star zero. Okay, first we have a question coming from Craig. Craig, go ahead.
Hello, Brian.
Hi, Craig. How are you?
Oh, great. You know what? First off, I have to tell you, I just love your Brian Tracy University and all. I'm doing the sales training, and I shared it with my mother-in-law, who's a real estate agent. She's, I left her watch a couple. She's, of course, you know, money's tight, and but she said, what a great program, you know, and I just wanted to tell you that. And I've actually, you know, I'm part of Toastmasters, and I've been able to use some of your material and make my own speeches. And since I've been able to do that, my speeches have become real, real good with my Toastmasters. And this has just really helped me in my sales career. And I don't know that I actually had a question. I just kind of wanted to tell you that I've really enjoyed and really have expanded what I know because of what you've shared with me through your university on the internet.
Well,
I just wanted to share that with you more than a question. I don't know.
Okay. Well, thank you, Craig. Let me just say this in response, is that you're going to have a great life, Craig, because you're a lifelong student. And people who are continually learning and getting better, the rule is your life only gets better when you get better. And if you're committed to getting better all the time, your life is just going to get better and better and better without end. So congratulations, and I'm glad Brian Tracy University online, and we now have a new business called Business Growth Strategies with all the same programs. Anybody who's listening to this, by the way, just go to my website, briantracy.com, and take a look. There's a whole bunch of free stuff there that can be very helpful to you in your journey of continuous learning.
Are you ready for your next question?
Of course.
Okay, our next question is coming from Larry. Larry, go ahead.
Brian, how you doing?
Hi, Larry. How are you?
I'm looking for good. I'm looking forward to seeing you in California come in January.
Thank you.
But my question is this. And I'm not asking for a donation, but I was just wondering, do you contribute to any organizations or interest?
Well, I contribute to dozens of them.
Do you? Okay. Okay, just curious, that's all. I read your book, The Flight Plan, and I was super impressed, and I shared it with some people in this last conference in Nevada, and a lot of the people decided to go ahead and buy the book through just what I told them, because it is life-changing, I think. You know.
Well, thank you.
So, thanks.
For the other people who are listening, Flight Plan, it's sort of based on persistence, but what it says is that successful people set a clear destination, kick off toward the destination, and keep making course corrections until they get there. Now, the book contains much more than that and explains every single step of the way, but that's really the key to great success. It isn't rolling your eyeballs and thinking happy thoughts and having a secret and having happy pictures and so on. Those are helpful, but they're not going to get you where you want to go. What gets you where you want to go is continuous action and continuous course correction. So, Larry, I'm glad you and your friends enjoyed the book.
Well, what I thought is amazing with you, different from other motivational speakers, is that other motivational speakers get you motivated, but they don't tell you how to do the how. And with you, in this book anyway, you show the how, which, you know, That I thought was exceptional, and I mean that's a key ingredient to have in your book, you know.
Well, thank you very much, Larry. Have a good day.
Okay. You too.
Okay, next we have a question coming from Mike. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, Brian, been a long-time follower of yours, and here's kind of the question. I'm doing well. I'm in sales. I'm in technology. I'm 50 years old, and I've done quite well, yet many of my peers have lost their positions, and it's taken them a long time to find a comparable position. They've gone 6 months, 9 months. Recently, 60 Minutes did a show on the 99ers. These are people that had master's and doctorate degrees that, you know, they're reaching that 99 weeks of unemployment. So that's kind of one of my worries that I have as well. If I were to lose my job or my division, you know, how long would it take me? And I guess two parts of the question. What would you do in my position? And if you were to lose that position, what are the skills that you can see that are going to become more prevalent? Is it sales? Is it technology-driven? From where you sit and from what you study, how can you help us to maintain our value to the company, our employability? Thank you.
Well, what you need to understand is that a job is an opportunity to make a contribution of value greater than your cost. And wherever you can find a situation where you can contribute more than you cost, you can create a job. Companies will hire you if they are convinced that you are going to cost less than you contribute. An enormous number of people, unfortunately, look upon themselves passively, and they hope that somebody will hire them, and they don't really relate to the fact that this is a dollar exchange. If you go to the market, you buy apples, you buy 5 pounds, you expect to get 5 pounds of good apples. When you go into the job market and you offer your time, you're offering a certain quality and quantity of contribution that has a value that is much lower than the amount that you're asking for. So you're a bargain. Now, as time and technology changes, you may have to change your offerings. I was talking to somebody who used to work for a company that sold hand crank adding machines back in the 50s. And with the invention of the calculator, all the adding machines in the world became junk. So people making and selling adding machines, they were out of work. There was no work for them anymore because nobody wanted the product. What we have in times of rapid turbulence is a lot of customers saying, I don't want that product anymore. I'm not going to buy it. I want something else. So what you have to be continually doing in your life is adding new skills. And if your current skills are not attracting job offers, then the market is saying, we don't want your skills. We don't want the product that you're bringing to market, so you had better get going. With people who are unemployed, and I've done years of study in this area, most of them sit at home most of the time until their benefits run out. And then they wonder why they're having such a hard time getting a job. Some of them don't go out on an interview in an entire week. They watch TV, they play on the Internet, they send out a couple of resumes on Craigslist or Monster.com, and they think that's job search. I have a program called 21 Great Ways to Get and Keep the Job You Really Want. Everybody who listens to the program is reemployed within 2 weeks. And one of the basic cores of the program is look upon job search as a 40 to 50 hour a week job. Getting a job is your full-time job. You get up at 6:30 in the morning and you exercise and you get dressed and you get to work and you start to hit it. And you hit all day long until there are no employers left to talk to. And you keep doing that every single day. And you'll be back in the workforce faster than you can imagine. A person who remains unemployed for an extended period of time is a person who does not want to work. There are just too many jobs out there. You can look at the newspapers. They're full of job offerings. Look at the Craigslist. It's full of job offerings. As an employer, every company I speak to is looking for talented people. And so if a person doesn't have a job for 99 weeks, then the person needs to really, really revisit their thinking about their role in the workplace, because there are always job opportunities for creative people. Have you noticed that there are some people who are never unemployed? No matter what, they've got two or three jobs. They've always got a job, and they've got job offers, and they've got weekend jobs, and they've got evening jobs, and they've got home jobs. I mean, they're never unemployed, no matter what. And some of them are high school dropouts. They don't have PhDs, but they're always working. And why? It's because they make a decision. I'm going to be always working. And so that's what people need to do. And they need to get some more information. I ask people, have you read the books on creative job search? No, it wouldn't do me any good. So it's basically like being in a foreign country and someone says, have you read the map? No, I'm lost, but I don't want to look at the map because, you know, it wouldn't help me. Well, what they're trying to do is navigate a foreign country without a map and with no road signs. So what they have to do is they have to get really, really serious about getting that map and reading the books and listening to the programs and taking the courses and getting back into the workplace. I tell you, if you said to a person, you don't have a job by Friday, I'm going to blow your brains out. That person would have a job by Friday. if the incentive was big enough, if they were motivated enough, they'd have some kind of a job, and they'd have it within that time period. So I don't mean to jump all over it, but there are people who are never employed, and your job and my job is to be one of them. And that's why we continually upgrade our skills, so we are a good catch. So employers really want us. So I hope that's helpful to you. Next question.
Okay, our next question is coming from Ingrid. Ingrid, go ahead.
Hi, Brian. How are you today?
Hi, Ingrid.
Hey, I just wanted to say thank you very much. I listened to this information that you gave today many years ago, and it really changed my life. And I had a recent really bad setback, and so I'm really glad that you had this program today because it's going to get me back on track. So thank you. No questions.
Thank you, Ingrid. Good luck to you.
Thanks.
Next question.
Next we have Cheryl. Cheryl, go ahead.
Brian.
Hi, Cheryl.
Thank you very, very much for helping me recently in my life. And I've really enjoyed tonight's call. Will there be a recording of the call at all?
Maybe what?
Will there be a recording of this call that we can go back and listen to?
Well, of course. If you have enrolled in this teleseminar, you'll not only get a CD version of the call all cleaned up to listen to, but you'll also get a transcript of the call all written down so that you can read it and underline it. And it will come out to you in 24 hours.
Thank you very, very much. And I'm really enjoying the growth seminar that I'm busy doing that is really helping me tremendously as well.
Thank you very much.
Okay, next we have a question coming from Bart. Bart, go ahead.
Hey, Brian. Great talk to you.
Hi, Bart. How are you?
I'm doing just great. I got a couple of questions. I've got seven employees, and I love what you said about resilience, and I'm trying to communicate that to them as well. I'm trying to help them to understand how important it is to have a positive attitude, and I've been sharing some tools with them that I have. But if I were going to give them a program, say for Christmas, from you, what would you recommend the program be to get somebody started kind of on the Brian Tracy trail and get them to understand how important it is to have a positive attitude? And my second question is, also, maybe some way to help them to understand what I mean when I talk to them about creating value outside of just doing their job.
Well, the second one is hard to answer because most people are passive, Bart, is they don't see themselves as proactive agents. That's why they require supervision and management. But the first question is I would recommend my program. It's called The Psychology of Achievement, and it's the most popular program on personal success and achievement and positive thinking in the world in 27 languages. So you could get them that for Christmas, and it is amazing how many people's lives transform in the first hour when they start to listen to that program.
I've listened to it 100 times, so I know exactly how powerful it is. So thank you very much.
So that's the one to give them.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Bart. Next question.
Okay, next we have a question coming from Linda. Linda, go ahead.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Linda.
I'm so glad you're well with all of your cancer. And so I just want to say, like, what a gift you are to me and to everybody who has read anything or listened to anything that you've ever done. I'm just so grateful to be on this call with you and that you still have got a message to say out there. So I wanted to start out by saying thank you.
Well, thank you.
And I guess my question is, I love what you say about staying away from negative people, but if you're kind of married to somebody who's negative, it's it's a little challenging when it comes to listening to it and trying to be positive or just kind of ignoring that. I mean, how would you best suggest to try to coach somebody who that you really can't avoid?
The last time I gave advice on this, I got sued because the people came to the conclusion they just didn't want to live in this situation for the rest of their life, and they walked away. and I got sued for being a home wrecker. So,
I promise I won't sue you. I'm just looking at any kind of positive construction. My husband and I are both self-employed, and I'm doing relatively well. I'm a dentist, and he's in retail, and so he's up and down, and depending on how the day is, I just want to be able to give him the positive encouragement that things will turn around. However, I'm just looking at, like, what's the best way to kind of either snap him out of it or coach it, because it is something that can go up and down. And, you know, I listen to you a lot as far as your resilience and things like that, and just everything you've been through. You've just been amazing, and I just want to say, okay, it's not that bad. You know, you're healthy. You have your health. Everything is great. So
we say in Los Angeles, how many psychiatrists does it take to change a light bulb? And the answer is only one, but the light bulb has to really want to change. And that's the best answer I can give you, Linda. If he doesn't really want to change, it is virtually impossible for you to do it from the outside. Now, maybe many people, thousands over the years, have bought their spouse Psychology of Achievement and asked them to listen to it. And what they'll say is, no, I'm not going to listen to this stuff. It's a bunch of motivational crap. And I say, look, I've got a 30-day guarantee on this. If I don't like it, I could send it back. Would you listen to it and give me your opinion? And they say, okay, I'll listen to it. I'll tell you what's wrong with it. And they'll start to listen to it, and they transform. So that's a piece of advice that I've gotten from literally thousands of my clients over the years. They say, you know, I've got a guarantee on this. Would you listen to it and give me your opinion? And I say, sure, I'll give you my opinion. And they start to listen to it, and they change their whole thinking. So give that a try.
Awesome. I've got it in my library. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, there's no further questions.
Well, thank you very much for everybody who's been on this line. I hope this has been helpful to you. The audio version will be out to you starting next week. The transcript will be out and available to you next week. We'll send it to you by email. And if you have any questions or concerns, come to briantracy.com and ask us the questions. And if you'd like to learn more about business growth strategies and online training programs and all the free things we have, just go to briantracy.com and we'd be pleased to help you. Thank you very much for being on the line. I'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.